I'd like to call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, May 14, 2019, and the time is 9 o'clock a.m. Present with us today is Representative Knopp, Representative LeBron, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Johnston, Representative Merrick, Representative Josephson, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Ortiz, and Co-Chair Foster, and I'm Co-Chair Wilson. We have a full plate today of bills to be heard, and so I'm going to take a quick at ease because I want to make sure that we have those online that we need to for the SB 16, since yesterday we had several people who wanted to testify and we had to delay the bill, so at ease. Back on the record, again, my apologies for those who called in, but I do see that a couple of them are back today. So we're going to start with SB 16, alcohol license fairs, theaters, concerts, and bonds. We had kept public testimony open. I'm going to continue public testimony now. I'm going to go ahead and do I need to reopen it? Okay, so it's still open. So we're going to go straight to William Harrington. If you could please put yourself on the record, your affiliation.
Yes, my name is William Harrington. Thank you, Chairman. Unaffiliated and retired. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay. I'd like you to take a hint from Joe Camel and the tobacco industry's targeting of children and apply that to the liquor consumption in Alaska. Having sporting events, family recreation areas, and any child-centric activity promoted by the alcohol industry or infused with alcohol is just plain wrong. I'll tell you the fast story of Gary Root, my friend. He told me when he was a kid, about 13 years old, his dad was in the military, and the kid ran over and spied in the window of the officers' club and saw the people drinking and laughing and having fun. Gary told me, he says, that's the life for me. And sure enough, it was. 50 years of drinking, and it ruined him. He also went to rehab. And we went over to a friend's house, Mel's house, and his wife offered Gary a drink. Well, Gary just got out of rehab. He said, sure, it was Don Patron, the good stuff. He drank half the bottle, which I later got chastised by the wife for bringing him over. The point being is rehab doesn't work, and alcohol, once you start young, you're going to continue. I have grandchildren down there in Juneau, and I really don't like the idea of alcohol being served up at Eagle Crest. If you guys need the money that bad, why don't you just throw up a GoFundMe page? I think that for where I live, there's at least 5 liquor stores within walking distance and many bars. There's no problem getting alcohol in this state anytime. When I lived in Juneau, the bars were open until 5 a.m., which is why I missed work some Saturdays. So that's my point, is that I don't want alcohol around children. And while these events that you're promoting, some of them certainly would be adult events where you've got music, alcohol, and probably a lot of illegal drugs, too, if it's a rave festival. So, hey, they let them have fun. But bringing it around kids is just plain wrong. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harrington. Thank you for calling back in today. I also see we have Jerome Hurdle from the Alaska State Fair. It says questions. Did you want to also testify?
I don't know how good that was.
Jerome, are you there?
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the House Finance Committee, my name is Jerome Hertel with the Alaska State Fair, and I'm just here to testify in support of Senate Bill 16, an important piece of legislation, I think, that will allow the Alaska State Fair to serve Alaskans as we have for the past 37 years by grandfathering us into a license category that has been problematic for us for the past few years. So I urge your support of it, and I'm here to answer and available for any questions you might have.
And, sir, could you tell us, have you had any violations or any issues that in the time that you've had the current license that you have now?
I would have to check on that. As far as I know, we've been violation free for about the past for as long as we've had the license. I think we may have had a notice of a violation that was due to a misinterpretation of the license and how we operated under the license. I would have to check with that, and I'd have to get back to you with that.
No, that's okay. I just kind of want to make sure everybody understood that this had nothing to do with any violations that you had. It's just an interpretation of this particular license. It's no issue that the fair has brought upon itself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no problems it's been brought on by ourselves, no.
Perfect. And I have a question here from Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, good morning. My question is, do you read the bill as I do, that if we didn't create a new fair license permit, you would be grandfathered and enjoy the same privilege in any case?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is correct. We would be grandfathered in as a recreational site license. That is how I am interpreting the language in the bill. And we would probably choose to operate under that operational license, under that recreational site license.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, if you could just kind of hold on. There may be other questions that may come your way. We also have Cody Costello also says questions from the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. Did you want to add any testimony?
Hi, thank you, Chair and committee. My name is Cody Costello. I'm the Vice President of Strategic Development and Communications at Alaska Center for the Performing Arts in Anchorage. And I just want to say we are in support of this bill. Thank everyone for the hard work on it. It provides us with a lot of clarity and stability and interpretation and allows us to move forward with operations planning and efforts moving forward for the foreseen future in a way that allows us to grow our business responsibly. We've never had any incidents with our operation in 30 years. Thank you.
And I just want to make sure you're on the record that this bill just only allows you to do what you've currently been doing.
Correct.
Any other questions for Ms. Costello? Seeing none, thank you. We next have Tiffany Hall. Tiffany? Do you please put yourself on the record and your affiliation?
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Tiffany Hall. I'm the Executive Director of Recover Alaska. We are an organization that works to reduce excessive alcohol use and harms around the state. We're not an abstinence-only organization. We simply work to promote low-risk drinking and to follow best practices from around the country and around the state in terms of alcohol. As you all likely know, alcohol is a really, really huge issue in our state. The harms of alcohol cost our state $1.84 billion every year. And Alaskans are dying at a rate nearly three times as high as the rest of the nation. I just want to point out that every time we pass a bill that increases outlets for alcohol, we are sort of going against some best practices, and I just want to make sure that we are also considering how to be mindful about health and safety. I understand that a lot of the businesses already have been operating, even if it was outside of the way the ABC board is viewing the guidelines currently. And I'm not against what will be happening. I'm not against the bill. I'm just wondering if the committee would also consider adding a health and safety measure to this bill, such as statewide keg registration. Keg registration is something that's already happening in Anchorage and in Juneau. It is a national best practice. It is a way to simply make sure that if somebody purchases alcohol for underage parties or underage drinking, they can be held liable. It's as simple as having somebody register for a keg and having a sticker on the keg, and that way if the keg is found, then that person can be held liable. Another option is regulating internet sales of alcohol. Right now, Alaska is one of the only states that does not have any regulation on purchasing alcohol from the lower 48. Right now, a teenager could go online and order whiskey and have it delivered to the doorstep, and 40% of the time that would happen because we have no way to regulate that. Additionally, Alaska is not collecting any license fees or any excise tax on that alcohol coming into the state. These are amendments that are ready to go that we have been searching for somebody to help us get in. These are things that are in SB 52 that is not going to cross the finish line this year, but they both just feel really critical to pass this year. The sooner the better. So I just wanted to offer that up for the committee. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. And Ms. Hall, you do realize that we are not offering any new licensing, and this would be to just take care of the 11 businesses that kind of got into a bind with a reinterpretation of statute.
Yes, ma'am. I realize that. I appreciate that. I just thought whenever we're doing anything about alcohol, it would be wise to include public health and safety since we have such horrible outcomes in this state.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But we also have a Title IV rewrite for those type of policy calls. Seeing no other questions, thank you. Next, we have Sarah Oates. Sarah, if you could please put yourself on the record and your affiliation, you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman and members of House Finance Committee.
Can you talk a little louder?
Yes, sorry. Let me take it off speakerphone. Is that better?
That is much better. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My name is Sarah Oates, and I am the President and CEO of the Alaska Cabaret, Hotel, Restaurant, and Retailers Association, commonly known as Alaska CHAR. Our association represents a large percentage of liquor licensees across the state of Alaska. I've provided a lot of testimony on this bill across numerous committees, so I'll keep it very brief today. Alaska CHAR supports grandfathering in those existing businesses who have been operating for quite a number of years under licenses and returning licenses to those who have lost their licenses due to a change in enforcement of the statute. And we support the current version of this bill. Thank you.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you so much for calling back in today. The only other one I have is the gentleman that testified yesterday, so we don't do it twice, but he is here if we have questions from Alaska Travel Adventures. But are there any others online that would like to testify? Yeah, we have Erica McConnell on from the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office. I know we'll have some. Erica, did you want to testify on the bill, or are you just here for questions?
Madam Chair, this is Erica McConnell from the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. I wish to present the fiscal note, should you like me to do so.
Okay, we will do that outside of public testimony. Is there
Thank
anyone
you.
Else online? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on SB 16? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. I do have Erica McConnell on the line. I do have a couple questions that have kind of been brought to my attention on this particular bill. So I received a call today talking about individuals who put applications in for a recreational license before the actual – what I guess I need to know from you is, first of all, if you could just go over what you're allowed to do with a recreational license compared to any other license, and when exactly did the interpretation change and the first business be told that they were going to have to go for a different license?
Madam Chair, for the record, this is Erica McConnell, Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. The statute regarding recreational site licenses is at 0411210, and it says that a holder of a recreational site license may sell beer and wine at a recreational site during and 1 hour before and after a recreational event that is not a school event. Then it says that a recreational site includes a location where baseball games, car races, hockey games, dog sled racing events, or curling matches are regularly held during a season. The board started looking at this issue right around 2010, 2011, and had a policy for a couple years, and then started work on a regulations project, which eventually didn't go anywhere, but was called out by the legislative auditors in 2014 during that audit for issuing licenses that were not in compliance with this section of statute. And then the auditors again called the board out in 2017 for the same reason. So this issue has been something that the board has struggled with for approximately the last 10 years.
But when did you make your first – when did you first tell your the first license holder who had a recreational license that they no longer fit underneath the original – I mean, we obviously gave recreational licenses to a group that – maybe should not have had it. When were they first alerted that they were not going to get them renewed?
Through the, Madam Chair, the board, it was renewing for the 2018-2019 license period was the first time that the board said, you, whoever, particular license holder, do not qualify for this type of license, so we are going to issue what we are calling the final renewal. You will get renewed for one more period, which is 2 years, and then you will not be renewed again after that. So that would have happened for the first time with a number of licenses for who got renewed for the 2018-2019 licensing period.
So if they're no longer able to get a recreational license, what is their options at that point?
Madam Chair, it depends on the business type. Some businesses were able to find a restaurant or eating place license. We had two licensees that were able to do that. Some other types of licenses did not seek out different license types. They could have tried to find a beverage dispensary license, but as I believe everyone is aware, those are not generally available from population limits, so they would have had to purchase them on the secondary market, which can be quite expensive.
So why didn't the board look at the possibility of grandfathering these individuals in and starting it out new, or at least help individuals be able to, I mean, basically, we shut businesses down for something that they were at no fault. So why did the board not seek out the possibility of grandfathering in these particular businesses as they then would go forward after 2018-2019 with this, I don't know how to call it, new interpretation, because it sounds like they probably never should have, but the businesses weren't not at fault for what happened. So why wasn't grandfathering one of those options?
Madam Chair, there is no provision in the statute for the board to grandfather these licenses. However, during the steering committee's work on the rewrite of Title IV, which began in 2012, they had developed a proposal that would give rec site licenses that were not compliant with the statute, that would give them 8 years to sort of phase out of being licensed. So that was the proposal in the Title IV rewrite.
So does this not open the state up for a lawsuit, because we literally allowed businesses to grow based on a license that they had, as far as they knew legally had, and I think they did at that time, made all these investments, and then to no fault of their own, they're told it is no longer going to be valid. Does that not open the state up to a lawsuit?
Madam Chair, as I am not a lawyer, I do not feel qualified to answer that question.
I'm not a lawyer either, and I don't want to find out in court. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. McConnell, we've had this conversation a year or so back and sharing emails, but in the statutes, when I believe, if I recall correctly, when I read the legislative audit, I think they suggested that these recreational licenses were issued very liberally at the time, and I think the reason they're not in compliance is the fact that the definitions of that recreation is not in statute. Is that why we determined that they were issued too liberally? And do you not find it a little unreasonable that any legislative body could have identified in statutes every recreational opportunity? Do I understand that correctly?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, the guidance that I understand, when there is a list of examples when it's talking about what is a recreational site, is that one looks to the commonalities among all of the examples given, and then you evaluate the new proposal to see whether it meets the commonalities of the list given. Why the board made choices and decisions that it made, you know, 15, 20 years ago, that information is sort of lost to time, but they did appear to issue licenses to businesses that didn't operate during a season and whose activities didn't match the commonalities in the list that's given in statute.
So, I think you and I agree on that, but I guess I'm a little frustrated and disappointed that the director, whether it was you at the time or one prior to you or the board, didn't come back and when this thing became public and talk to the legislature about mending the definition of recreation, so maybe the board had more discretion in issuing these licenses. But instead, we've spent numerous years now trying to fix what you guys are trying to undo, and I think that's where our Chair Wilson is having issues. These people who've established businesses and applied for these licenses and part of the entertainment value, and they are fairly restrictive in their hours of operation and serving. And so, frankly, I'm disappointed in the path and the amount of time we've had over the years having to address this. And so I think my question for you is a final follow-up. I know we're grandfathering these, but do you think in statute that somehow this legislature should in fact address recreation as a whole and not try to define it in two or three or four examples?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I certainly know that the board doesn't wish to take licenses away from businesses, and I think everybody was hoping that the Title IV rewrite would have been passed many years ago. What I wish from the legislature is clarity and boundaries. So if the legislature wishes to define recreation, that's terrific. Just make it what your guidance to the board is. The more clear that you can make that, the better that is for the board and for the staff and for the public to understand what the legislature's expectations are in terms of what types of businesses should be able to get liquor licenses.
Okay, thank you. And I'll just wrap up, Madam Chair, in saying that, you know, it would be nice to be very specific and cover everything we could, but sometime you have to go to legislative intent in that, and I think that's where we fell down. So thank you, Ms. McConnell.
Perfect. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. McConnell, were you present at the hearings of the previous committee, Labor and Commerce?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think I was, yes.
Okay. I'm just a follow-up. I'm just curious. The previous version of the bill repeals the caterer's permit, or actually it repeals the surrendering of the permit and how it gets surrendered at the time of expiration. And this CS doesn't have that. Is that significant in some way in your mind, or is it?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, no, that is not significant. We generally issue permits via email and have not been requiring them to be returned to us after the event.
Okay, thank you.
And then on the recreational licensing, the 11 that we're looking at, have all of them been given notice or have any of them been renewed without being told that there may be an issue in the future?
Madam Chair, one of the 11 was denied and has made a claim that they were not noticed, and that is working its way through an appeal process, but everybody else was definitely noticed.
And it's my understanding that there was a renewal of one of the ski facilities. That one that was renewed last year, were they given notice that this would be the last time it would be renewed underneath the recreational licensing?
Actually, no. That one was not given any sort of notice about that. They were renewed with no discussion.
And why is that?
I couldn't answer that question. It was a board decision, and I do not know why the board didn't make any comments regarding that.
But would they not? Okay, so just so I'm not confused, and I don't want you to tell me what the board did, but in your opinion, as the director, would this not have fallen outside of would this not have fallen out just like the fair one did, that did not really qualify underneath the reinterpretation of the statute?
Madam Chair, that was my opinion, and that my recommendation to the board was not to renew that because it did not meet the statute.
But they did anyway.
Correct.
And with that happening, is that one of the consequences that another ski resort decided to put in for a licensing based on that decision, went through the whole process, understanding that since one did, that there would be no reason they didn't, after a lengthy application and process, were then denied because they did not fit underneath the recreational license?
Madam Chair, that particular applicant wrote to me and said, I submitted the application based on the board's history of approving recreational site liquor licenses for other ski resorts. However, there is no argument to the fact that the plan I submitted on how alcohol would be served truly did not follow the statute guidelines and that the board was simply doing their job by following the law.
Okay, but that was not the question. So the question was, did they put an application in, go through the process with the understanding, as you just said, that another ski resort received a full license again and then fell outside of the definition of recreational site?
Yes, Madam Chair.
So as you can see, there's a lot of issues going on here with the ABC board. What my intent still is to try to figure out how we grandfather those in who, out of good faith, had a license, may have surrendered it voluntarily. We're not talking about any bad actors. And then this last issue we were just brought forward, that an investment was done in a business with looking at another business that got a full license. If they had given this other ski resort their one last chance, like they did with the fair and the others, they would have been able to tell, but they gave no notice to this business that there was a new definition, basically, for a better way of putting, reinterpretation, and therefore shouldn't even go through the process. They did get their money back, but they wasted a lot of time and also did substantial investment in anticipation that it would follow like the other one does. I also have the staff from Senator Michicki, if they want to weigh in before we put this bill aside. She is saying no, that she doesn't. We also had one other issue we were talking about yesterday, and that had to do with the music that was being played. It is my understanding that if they go back to a recreational license, that does not become an issue. Even though they have surrendered their license at this time, this bill would allow them to make a choice to go back to the license they surrendered. They would have to sell the current license that they have within that, and we do have verification. I'll get that from Ms. McConnell just to make sure that I have that correct. If this bill were to pass and allowed someone who voluntarily surrendered their license based on the interpretation, got a new license, different type of license, that the board would work with that individual business or businesses to allow them to go back to a recreational license, but that they would then have to sell the other license. Is that accurate, Ms. McConnell?
Yes, Madam Chair. They would not be able to have two licenses, but they could choose which one they preferred to keep.
And you will work with them to make sure that that happens?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. McConnell, do you recall off memory, is there a, under the existing grandfathered recreational licenses, hours of operations for entertainment, is that in statute, and is it 3 p.m. to 11, or do you recall what that is?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, there are no hours of entertainment limitations for a recreational site license. There are limitations for a restaurant or eating place license in terms of entertainment.
Okay, thank you.
We also have Ms. Curtis here. I'm just going to, before we set this aside, if Ms. Curtis could come to the table, this may not be under your purview. If it isn't, my apologies. I know this was brought up in an audit, not quite in the way that it's been described, but auditing-wise, if we were to grandfather these 11 in, not a new license, that won't cause an auditing problem, you know, for them in the future.
For the record, this is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. Auditors look at criteria.
So we will look at the statutes and regulations, and we use that to audit against. So I'm not familiar with the bill. I haven't looked at it. But when we go in to do the next sunset, given that this has been an issue in the past, we will focus on licenses and test the licenses to make sure they are done in accordance with the statutes and regulations. I think the comments made by Ms. McConnell were excellent. Clarity is really important. And making sure that's clear, clear criteria to the board and to auditors and to the public and to businesses is really important.
And in your audit, is that kind of what you were bringing up, is making sure that, and maybe that's where some of the problem all this caused, is that it allows for so much interpretation that depend upon who the board members were at the time. And so as you're talking about clarity, maybe that's a portion that we need to look at a time when we're not within 24 hours of adjourning.
As far as clarity, the statutes were really clear as Ms. McConnell read them. They actually list out the specific activities that qualified. So if I remember right, the entities that we found were spa, travel tour company, pool hall. Those types of things were clearly not in accordance with statute.
Perfect. Any questions for Ms. Curtis on this? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. I'm just trying to understand how we put all these pieces together. I am going to set the bill aside. It's my intent to bring it back this afternoon. I want to make sure that we are truly righting what I think are some wrongs that businesses went into what they believe was the law at the time, made investments based on that. But I also want to make sure that we're not opening it up to new licensing at this point. That is something that should be done through another venue, which I do know that there is another bill making its way slowly for the last years through the legislative process. So if there's anything else anybody sees between now and this afternoon from this hearing, please let my office know as soon as possible. Representative Knopf, do you have another comment?
Well, I do. I'm concerned about the Madam Chair. I'm concerned about the hours of operation, and looking through the old bill, I see it does address the restaurant eating place licenses, not recreational licenses. So I think we still need to continue to look at that, as the gentleman who testified yesterday would like to provide entertainment through the lunch hour. So it's still an issue on my mind.
Representative Knopf, if they go back to a recreational license, they can do an hour before, an hour after the business, and the business opens, and afterwards. Their issue is only because they had to switch the licensing. It is my understanding from the testimony yesterday that it's why I wanted to put it on the record that they will go, if this legislation was to pass, they will go back with a recreational license, which takes care of that issue for them. But it may be something as it goes through, and we, again, have staff from Senator Machicki's office here who has the other bill working its way through, that they might want to look at that on those other licensing, because these licenses, as they were given, will no longer be available, so there will be others that will be in the issue that we heard from the previous business. So something that definitely needs to be brought forward, Representative Knopf. Appreciate that. Anything else on this, on SB 16? Seeing here none, we are going to set that bill aside for this afternoon's work. The next we're going to have up is SB 43. And if we can bring Ms. Curtis up before we... I'm also going to hold this bill. As my understanding, there's another amendment that's potentially coming to finance on this bill. But what I would like to do is have a little conversation about the audit, the difference between 5 years and the potential of 2 years, what kind of, when this actual audit happened, what we would expect to hear if it was audited 2 years from now, 4 years from now, or the full 5 years, because I think the intent is we're trying to, there's some people on, individuals who are just very uncomfortable with this board at this point, but if we're going to have a pay for an audit, we want to make sure that there's been enough time to be able to get the information necessary. So if you can kind of help us understand why you picked 5 years, and if we shorten that time, what we might be able to see versus waiting five.
For the record, I'm Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. I don't have the number of hours that went into this particular audit, but I know there's more than 800. And I think our hourly rate is around $78, $79 an hour, so that's about $70,000 it took to do this audit. We just audited this board 3 years prior to this. So 2015 and then 2018. 3 years is a short time frame. Usually when we recommend a three-year extension, it's because we have a serious issue. I have gone down to 2 years when there's a public safety concern. We have recommended for the, I think, midwives. At one point, we had some serious public safety concerns, so we were recommended 2 years. As far as has there been enough time, we can always look at a board and, using our criteria, determine whether they're serving the public's interest. I've heard nothing that would make me believe that we would come to a different conclusion. When we start our field work, it would be next year. No, so they terminate this year. We would start our work next year. We do it a year before it terminates. So within 1 year, I don't believe we would find anything that would, given we just went, we just audited them. So as far as the term of extension, that is purely your decision. We make recommendations based on what we find, and then it's up to you folks. This is going to be a statutory requirement. That means we will give it priority over anything else we have in the queue. There are other audit requests that have come through the LBNA committee that we are waiting for resources to address, and those will be put aside while we deal with the financial audit, the federal compliance audit, and anything required by statute. So this will be given priority if you make it a priority.
So just so I understand correctly, we audited them 3 years ago, and now we're only still giving them five, which is, I guess, at least is an improvement from the 3 years. So I guess we're just trying to, figure out why we didn't end up with 8 years this time when it kind of seems like we put them on notice with a three-year audit.
Yes. Actually, we are suggesting or recommending a six-year extension. That was reduced in Senate Finance to 5 years. And as my understand it, in recognition of the concerns over the investigations. It has been testified that we did not conclude that they were doing a poor job with investigations. We concluded that there was no documentation to support periods of inactivity. That is what our criteria does not have us look at the quality of the decisions or whether they made the right decisions. It makes us look at the efficiency with which they made those decisions. So that is always our focus when we're doing a sunset audit. And unless I have any other direction through the LBNA committee, we will always use that 11 sunset criteria you see in the back of an audit as far as when we're doing a sunset audit.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Curtis, I'm curious, something relatively simple. You said we will prioritize it if you ask us to. Can you just explain that? So if any committee says we want you to prioritize that, you just bump it up the queue? Or
Representative Josephson, through the chair, no. We always prioritize anything with a statutory requirement. So if we have a performance audit request that came through the LBNA committee, any legislator can request an audit through the LBNA committee. And if that's approved, we put that in our queue, first in, first out. And as resources allow, we will address those audit requests. Sunset audits have a statutory requirement, so those are given priority.
Okay.
Good. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Curtis, I think you just answered my question, but I did hear you say, so for every board that has a sunset requirement, you're mandated by statute to audit them regardless of the length of the 2 years, 5 years, 8 years, you must do an audit?
Through the chair, not all boards have an audit requirement. Not all entities with a sunset date have an audit requirement. Most do, but you will hear certain things come up that have a sunset, and you will ask for an audit. And like, what do the audits say? And they'll say there's no audit because there's no audit requirement. Occupational boards, many of them have this sunset requirement. The date, when you extend a board, you put a date in statute, and we will come in a year before that date is due and do the sunset audit. And the audit is required by statute to be considered during this process.
Follow-up?
So this board, if it was only extended for 2 years, and I didn't want an audit, it come back in 2 years, would you be mandated to do one regardless?
Through the chair, yes.
And if our biggest concern, this is my biggest concern really, is that it's the investigations and taking so long and being able to go back on someone 5-6 years later. An audit really doesn't cure that. That would be something most likely that we'd have to do in statute.
Through the chair, the committee itself can have us add something to a sunset audit. That was just done the last meeting. They had us look at the ABC board, the next ABC board sunset audit. There's concern over the timeliness of the licensing. So they wanted us to focus on that during our next sunset audit, so we are going to add that to the sunset audit. So while I do have 11 sunset criteria, there is some ability for us to look at something more pointedly if legislators want us to add that.
Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at this bill as it's presently crafted, the sunset date is 2024. So you would begin an audit 1 year before that date as a standard practice. And Ms. Curtis, did I hear that an audit could be requested before that date by who?
Through the chair, any legislator can request an audit through the LBNA committee. Now, the timing is a bit tricky because we do it as resources allow. So at what point we will end up doing the audit is unknown, depending on how our resources. So we are completing an audit right now that was requested in 2015. So it can take, well, of course, we started it last year, so it could take a long time to get to it. But I say typically when someone requests an audit, I won't start it for a year at least, or a special performance audit.
Wow, thank you.
Representative Knopp.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And so I guess that I think you just said it again. You kind of answered me before I asked the question. But so when you do a sunset audit, you kind of just follow in a particular set of guidelines, statutory guidelines. You have a process that you follow. So when we have additional concerns with the board, and that would be one of the reasons that tomorrow I will probably attempt to shorten this because my issues and other issues aren't things that are addressed in your audit. And so you request a special audit to do so, and that may be a few more years down the road, you know, before if I went to LBNA and asked for a special audit to address particular items. I guess that in effect, Madam Chair, is the same thing. We'd be 3-4 more years to get that, whereas
I think Representative Knopp, we could put it, if I understand Ms. Curtis, is that if we have specific concerns right now, we should put it, I'm assuming we should have it in this bill saying, or do we tell you, I'm not, maybe that's where we're both confused, is do we need to put it in the bill or do we send you a letter saying, you know, by this next audit we want to know these specific things that would normally fall outside? I guess what is the process?
And I think, Madam Chair, you're right. Does it have to be made? Does the request have to be made in a special audit, or do we have the availability, the option to ask you to look at these things in your regular course of a sunset audit, I think maybe is the question.
Through the chair, you can certainly ask us to attach it to a sunset audit. I think that is the most efficient way to answer those questions. I caution you I usually work with someone when they're doing an audit request. To make sure they're auditable questions. Auditors need criteria. So we're not going to be using subjectivity to look at something. It has to be statutes. Sometimes we can use best practices. Sometimes we can compare it to other states. But we need criteria in order to answer. They have to be auditable questions.
So, and thank you, Ms. Curtis, for that, Madam Chair. So I think that in lies my point. You know, there's when, for what short time I've been in the legislature, and the feedback I've gotten on this particular board over that short time period, I think we need to take a look, you know, and I don't think we need not to do that. We need to have a discussion amongst ourselves, you know, about the issues, the comments and we've had, and that is why I was going to move to shorten the audit period so we have 2 years to talk about this and address this and decide in that 2 years. If we want to revamp, change the criteria for the board, their responsibilities, so to speak, or leave them as is. And at that time, I think either
clear the area to fix it, or get the audit, get their board sunset days back up to 6 years or 8 years, wherever it should be. But I just, you know, they've been an issue with my office for some time, and just kind of looking for that opportunity to address some issues, you know. So
I think maybe we, although it doesn't seem like we have a long time, but I think we have time today to maybe reach out to Ms. Curtis on those specific issues, see if there's some that we can do that, and if you feel comfortable enough. My only concern probably at this point to have it 2 years, I don't think we're going to get our questions answered and cost $80,000. But at the same time, if we can put something together and at least put a little framework around what our concerns are right now versus just moving it forward. So if I ask if maybe your office can get a hold of Ms. Curtis when we get done here and see if we can get something worked out.
Madam Chair, yeah, Ms. Curtis is not the one I need to go to fix these issues. It's conversations amongst all of us. Ms. Curtis would be the one for me to go to figure out the statutory requirements and other positions. So I would do that at some point in time, but not address my issues with her. No, ma'am.
Okay. So. Well, we're going to hold this until this afternoon anyway to see if we make sure we get everything correct. Representative LeBond, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Permission to comment?
Absolutely. Representative LeBond.
You used a phrase that was an alarm in my mind, and that's called best practices. And in the banking industry, when banks were examined by Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the state of Alaska, the term best practices was often spoken to the bank that was being examined. Best practices is a very intangible concept, and how you develop best practices in an audit is a slippery slope. And I guess that's just a comment that a cautionary comment that best practices are carefully crafted and sometimes not in the benefit of the party being audited. So that's just a comment.
Any other questions or comments? Did the sponsor want to add anything to the conversation or staff? It's up to you. Would you like to? You could please put yourself on the record. You've kind of heard our conversations and our issues. I don't think they're new ones.
For the record, my name is Gary Zapp, staff to Senator David Wilson. I, excuse me, sends his regards. He's on the floor in the other body right now dealing with the crime bill. I think Senator Wilson said he really appreciates the work that you've done, and at this point he doesn't have any other comments.
Perfect. And like I said, there may be one other amendment. That's the reason I'm holding it. We're going to. It's not a member who sits on here, but I'd rather have amendments in finance versus on the floor if we can possibly, so we can have that discussion if it's a different policy call. So hearing and seeing none, no more discussion on this bill. We're going to set it aside, and we are going to move to SB 10. We have heard the companion bill to SB 10, had public comment on Extend Suicide Prevention Council. We have staff for Senator Kawasaki here. Would you like to put yourself on the record, and is there any other comments you would like to make?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jacob Garish, staff to Senator Scott Kawasaki of Fairbanks. Thank you for hearing SB 10 again. This bill extends the Suicide Prevention Council for the 8 years as recommended in the legislative audit. This bill also has a fiscal note that I'd be happy to speak to if you would like me to.
So I will speak to the fiscal note. I have changed the fiscal note on this particular one. I have been trying for weeks to get involvement from the Department of Education on exactly what these grants were going to. I was unsuccessful of understanding exactly who they went to, how much they went to, and what purpose they were for. But what I do understand is that this council is very important. I also believe that they need more money so that when they have an emergency in an area, that they would be able to have enough travel and additional money for services for those instances. So what I have done is I have deleted the $461,700 from grants and benefits. I have added $61,700 to the $51,300 for services so that they can go in during emergencies and be able to provide whatever is necessary if a suicide has happened in an area and they have been called to do that. That is basically what they have been asked to do. I am uncomfortable just having pass-through grants with no accountability portion of that. Sir.
I'd just like to, through the chair, bring attention to the fact that there is a statute on record, 143362, which requires A school district and the department shall provide youth suicide awareness and prevention training approved by the commissioner to each teacher, administrator, counselor, and specialist who is employed by the district or department to provide services to students in grades 7 through 12 in a public school in the state at no cost to the teacher, administrator, counselor, and specialist. Right now, this funding through the grant program is the only thing that's going to satisfy that statute. If it is removed, I'm not sure how the administration would respond to that.
First of all, I don't really care how the administrator is going to respond to what House Finance does. I also know what statute does. Those grants are not being utilized for that. There is online training that is already available at no cost to the school districts. So if you have documentation on you currently, sir, that shows us exactly what that money goes to, because it does not go to every school district. So could you enlighten me on what that money is being spent to?
Yes.
Specifically, you have documentation on exactly on each school district is receiving it, currently what they are spending it on.
So not every school district receives the grant funding.
So therefore, we still require all of them to be able to abide by the statute. Is that not correct?
What the grant funding also paid.
Yes or no?
No.
So if the testimony you just gave me was that these grants were necessary so that they could take care of their obligation to be able to do that, then you would assume that the grants were going to every school district, which they are not. And so what I've been trying to get from the Department of Education was specifically, what are these grants being spent on? Because the training is online and available to all districts. So if you can provide House Finance staff right now with documentation showing specifically what these grants this year are being spent on, we'll be happy to pass them out to members. Is that what you currently have?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. Taking other comments from the committee.
Yes.
Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you asked my question. If there is any information that you have, even if it's partial, I'd love to see it. But getting the full and complete information would be certainly preferable. Thanks.
And Representative Foster, I have tried for a month to get this information. I don't even know how. They are literally passed through grants. No one can tell me exactly what the districts are spending it on. All districts do not get it. We were able to verify through our first hearing that it is online training, so this is not an unfunded mandate to our school district. What I did hear from the House member who came, Representative Tarr, was that one of the biggest things that they did was being able to take the council in to areas when a suicide happens and being able to provide services, and that's why I moved some of the money over to services. Any other questions, Representative Josephson?
Yes, as I understand it, Madam Chair, your proposal is to move away from intervention and to prevention. Is that correct?
No, Representative Josephson. What I am doing is, since I was unable to get information about specifically what these pass-through grants were being utilized by a few school districts, I took some of that money and moved it to services, because the council's biggest duty is to be able to go into, not just to meet in different communities, which I think that is very valuable, but to also, if something happens in a community, they are able to go in, get services, help that community out if a tragedy happens from within it. I didn't think that the $51,000 was probably enough, so I moved into the other $61,000 to give them about $110,000 to be able to take care of those issues. Representative Josephson.
The committee in April, when we looked at this, funded this other $400,000. Is that right?
It is true. And I've been trying since that point to find out exactly what that funding is being utilized for, and have had no response from the Department of Education. I finally got numbers of what districts were getting them, but not what the money is being utilized for at this point. And we just heard from the staff from the sponsor that it was being utilized to do the training. The training is online, as we heard from Representative Tarr, provided for free for those teachers. That is not what these grants are currently, as far as I know, that's not what these grants are being utilized for. Otherwise, it would be going to every school district, in which it does not.
And can you remind me how the other bodies saw this matter? If it's an open question that is still before the conference committee? Did they fund this $400,000?
This will go into a fiscal note. This is completely different than the operating budget. I believe it is in the operating budget currently, but this is a totally different piece of legislation. So what the other body is thinking, that is your guess, sir. Representative Ortiz.
No, I'm Madam Chair, I'm just listening closely. Right.
And that's why we are not passing this legislation out this morning, so that we can have more conversation. And maybe, in the meantime, we might actually hear from the Department of Education on specifically what these grants are being utilized for. You're not part of this discussion. Any other questions about the fiscal note or this area?
There's only so much I can take of this.
Yeah, well, we're going to set this aside. We're going to continue to have this discussion.
I just feel like we should be respectful of people.
Okay. Sir, if you want to, well, so far, I agree with you, but so far the information we've been given has not been accurate, and we need to have accurate information. Sir.
Chair Wilson, $70,000 of the grant funding does go through that to those modules that you talked about. The other funding goes to various things, including competitive grants of $25,000 to school districts that they can apply for.
So again, on the $25,000 specifically, what are they being utilized for?
Chair Wilson, we have information on that I'd be happy to give to the committee. I think I attached it with my hearing request. We also have Sharon Fischel online who administers the grants and would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, let's see who we have online. So it looks like we have Sharon Fischel from the Department of Education. Can you specifically tell us what these grants are utilized for in the districts and why some districts are chosen over others?
Hi, yes, Chair. This is Sharon Fischel from the Department of Education. I manage the suicide prevention money that comes for school-based suicide prevention. Currently, we have 9 districts that are receiving a grant for suicide prevention. Anchorage School District uses it to train staff in their most at-risk schools in McLaughlin, New Pass, and Avail, Benny Benson, SAVE, and Crossroads to provide safe and civil schools training to train staff and students on how to have a more positive school climate, and therefore kids want to come to school and are not getting into activities that otherwise would not be good for their mental health. Mat-Su School District uses theirs for their You Are Not Alone clubs. They have currently trained over 300 students to be peer-to-peer models and teaching younger students and their peers and high school, everywhere from 5th grade to 12th grade. They go into classrooms and train other students on the warning signs of suicide prevention and how to take them to, how students can work with their friends and take them to a trusted adult. Currently, they have trained over 1,400 students in the Mat-Su School District since November. That's just this year of what that grant has done in Mat-Su. The Kenai School District uses theirs for sources of strength, and they are going around, and again, it's a peer-to-peer type of model, building resiliency, building skills, again, looking at warning signs.
Ms. Fischel?
And that's a brief explanation, and so Jacob has some more detail of that program and his documentation that we provided. Then we have
Ms. Fischel, can you hear me?
Which uses their money, some of their money for sources of strength, but most of their money is going to restorative practices in their most at-risk school, Yakusta Kahini.
Ms. Fischel?
They're using their funding to train staff and students on alternate ways for suspension and expulsion. So kids who may be getting into trouble for different reasons in school, they are using that funding to do restorative circles and restorative practices to repair the harm so kids can stay in school and learn, and again, not be out on the streets and getting into different things. It also builds the self-esteem and the mental health of kids who are part of that program. Petersburg School District uses their grant to pay Petersburg Mental Health to come into the school and provide mental health counseling in their school, as well as positive behavior supports for building school climate in their middle and high school level and elementary. Then we would move to Fairbanks, which uses their program for signs of suicide in all of their middle school and high school. They go around and do the signs of suicide, do classroom lessons, and again, they have some peer leaders with that, as well as staff, that are working with kids to be able to recognize. If you're in the Fairbanks area, I'm sure you've seen their PSA ad that says it's okay to ask for help. And they've also had some of different things that have went on with that. They've had marches and different things to increase the awareness around suicide prevention. The North Slope uses theirs for restorative practices also that I explained with Juno. They also use theirs for positive behavior interventions and supports, which is, again, is a building a positive school climate program. Bering Strait School District has used theirs for their youth leaders program, where they bring in youth leaders from all of the sites in the Bering Strait School District, as well as the Nome School District they bring in, and they train these kids on how to be a leader in their community, how to be there for kids who need assistance, how to help kids get to a trusted adult. Again, the warning signs and building the leadership in these schools. A lot of them with Bering Strait and Lower Yukon School District also has the same type of program. And with that, they're also working with elders and going out in the community and not just building leadership within kids in the school, but they're also doing some community type service and going out and helping elders. And as I'm sure you know, that the suicide rate for our elder population is starting to rise also. That's the grants that we have currently, and kind of a short explanation of what they're doing.
Okay, so if we could get that in writing, I was trying to make it so that you didn't have to go through that whole list because it's hard for us to follow it. If you could get that to my office today, I've been asking for this for over a couple months. We are going to lay this bill aside. We have a meeting that we must get to at this point, and so we're not going to be able to finish any of the other parts of our business for today. My apologies, but it is 10:01, and this meeting is adjourned.